Hi, I'm Dan Q, and you're listening to a podcast that nobody asked for, exclusively about things that only I find interesting. Today, we're going to be talking about God's Advisor. As usual, there's a blog post to accompany this episode. You'll find it at danq.link/god. God's Advisor. Of all of the discussions I've ever been involved with on the subject of religion, and there have been a lot, the one I'm proudest of was perhaps also one of the earliest, at least one of the earliest I can remember. So let me tell you about the time that, as an infant, I got sent out of my classroom because I wouldn't stop questioning the theological ramifications of our school nativity play. Let's start with a quick primer. Here in the UK, it's common that at the end of the school term before Christmas, primary schools will put on a nativity play. A group of usually infant pupils act out an interpretation of the biblical story of the birth of Jesus. So that's a handful of 5 and 6 year olds playing the key parts of, for example, Mary, Joseph, an innkeeper, some angels, maybe a donkey, some wise men, some shepherds, and what have you. I've recently ended up watching nativity plays at my children's school, and I tell you what, the budget has gone up on them. Nowadays they've got proper costumes and set dressing. Maybe it's time, or maybe it's just that I grew up in a more deprived area, but I'm pretty sure when I was young, the costume for an angel was always just a bedsheet with a hole cut in it, or for a shepherd with a tea towel with an elastic band wrapped around it and secured upon a child's head. Anyway, as with all theatre performed by young children, a nativity play sort of straddles the line between adorable and unbearable. Somehow the innkeeper, who only has one line, forgets to say, "There is no room at the inn," and so it looks like Mary and Joseph just elect to stay in the barn, and then one of the angels wets herself in the middle of a chorus, and Mary, bored of sitting in the background and having run out of things to do, idly swings the saviour of mankind round and round, holding him by the toe. It's beautiful. I've worked on stage and backstage on a variety of productions, and I have nothing but respect, by the way, for any teacher who, on top of their regular workload and despite being unjustifiably underpaid, volunteers to put on a nativity play. I genuinely believe that the kids get a huge amount out of it, and man, it looks like a monumental amount of work. So, I was definitely in a couple of different nativity plays as a young child, but there's this one that in particular stands out in my memory. In order to put a different spin on the story of the first Christmas, one year my school decided to tell a different, adjacent story. This also presumably would spare the poor parents, who by now had probably seen children's amateur dramatics interpretations of the same story several times already. In any case, here's the summary of the key beats of the plot, as I remember it. God is going to send his only son to Earth and wants to advertise his coming, and he wonders, what kind of marker can I put in the sky to lead people to the holy infant's birthplace? And so he auditions a series of different natural phenomena. I forget what they all are, but the first candidate was a cloud, but its pitch gets rejected because, I don't know, it'll blow away or something, or because everyone hates rain. There's another candidate that's a rainbow. I guess that's rejected because it's derivative of a certain other biblical story. And so on and so forth until eventually you get to a star and God goes, aha, that's the one we'll use. And so some angels go and put the star in the right place and shepherds and wise men go and visit Mary and her new family and all that jazz. So far, this is totally on brand for a primary school nativity play, but with about 50% more imagination than the average, so nice. I always wondered if, like, the meteor strike of Bethlehem would be a good candidate. It lacks longevity, but it makes up for it in earth-shattering destruction. I was cast as advisor number one, and that's where things started to go wrong. In our interpretation, the part of God was played by my friend Daniel. But clearly our teacher figured that Daniel wouldn't be able to remember all of his lines. Our teacher was probably right. And so our teacher expanded the role into three. God, Advisor 1, and Advisor 2. This is a very bizarre twist on Trinitarian logic. After each natural phenomenon explained why it would be the best, Advisor 1 and Advisor 2 would each say a few words about the candidate's pros and cons, providing God with all of the information he needed to make a decision. And to my young brain, this seemed theologically absurd. Why should God need an advisor? Actually, there's probably something else going on there, because I remember being disappointed that I wasn't given the part of God. This perhaps wasn't an argument about a scripting decision so much as it was an argument about a casting decision. Anyway. But what I said was, if he's supposed to be omniscient, why does God need an advisor, let alone two? Actually, I probably didn't say that because I didn't know the word omniscient. Probably. But I knew the concept, and I certainly knew that my teacher was on spiritually shaky ground to claim both that God knew everything and that God needed an advisor. Now, the answer, of course, was that while God might be capable of anything, if the kid playing him managed to remember all of his lines, then that would really be a miracle. But I had interrupted rehearsals for my question, and my teacher, Mrs. Doyle, clearly didn't want to explain in front of the class that the child who'd been chosen to play God was a little bit of a thicko. But I wouldn't let it go. But, miss, are we saying that God could make mistakes? Couldn't God try out the cloud and the rainbow and then just go back in time when he knows which one works? Why does God send an angel to tell the shepherds where to go, but he won't do that for the kings? Miss, don't the stars move across the sky each night? Wouldn't everybody be asking questions about the big bright one that didn't? Hang on, what's supposed to happen to the Star of Bethlehem after God was done with it? Did it have planets? Did those planets have life? In the end, I had to be thrown out of class. I spent the rest of the rehearsal standing in the corridor because of my inability to accept at face value the theological ramifications of my nativity play. And it was totally worth it for this anecdote. Once again, this episode was based on a blog post, which you can find at danq.link/god. If you've enjoyed today's episode, hop over there and leave me a comment or email me on podcast@danq.me. And as always, Dan Q for listening. Dan Q very much.